This is VOA News via remote. I'm Liz Palka. The polls are now closed in the U.S. state of Georgia, but it's too early to tell what will happen in the two pivotal Senate races that will determine which political party will have the majority. Voter turnout was strong on Tuesday, with long lines of voters snaking into polling places. Many also turned out early to vote, about 3.1 million people, and their ballots were not to be counted until Tuesday. That also means final results may not be available by Tuesday night. With Democratic control, President-elect Joe Biden would likely offer more sweeping proposals to bolster health care in the U.S., tighten environmental controls that were eased under President Donald Trump, and try to make it easier for immigrants to gain U.S. citizenship. On the other hand, Republican control of the Senate would make the president-elect's political life more difficult and likely make negotiations harder on contentious issues. Washington, D.C. is bracing for possible violent protests that the National Guard has been called in for. This is all ahead of planned protests by President Trump's supporters in connection with the congressional vote expected Wednesday to affirm Joe Biden's election victory. Protesters are planning to rally Tuesday and Wednesday, seeking to bolster the president's unproven claims of widespread voter fraud. More than 50 pro-democratic activists in Hong Kong have been arrested on Wednesday, according to local media. This is the biggest crackdown yet against the democratic opposition under the contentious national security law. The arrests in the Asian financial hub included well-known democratic figures and former lawmakers. Police did not immediately respond to requests for comment. You can read the full story on voanews.com. This is VOA News. The U.S. Treasury Department announced sanctions against entities and individuals associated with Iran's steel industry on Tuesday. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said the administration remains committed to denying revenue flowing to the Iranian regime as it continues to sponsor terrorist groups, support oppressive regimes, and seek weapons of mass destruction. Iran's steel sector is a major source of revenue for the Iranian government. World Health Organization experts are due in China 1 year after the coronavirus outbreak. They are going for a highly politicized visit to explore the origins of the coronavirus. The WHO says China has granted permission for the visit by its 10-person team of experts. But before most could even begin their journeys, they faced roadblocks, with Beijing not yet granting them entry. In a briefing, WHO Chief Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus addressed the situation. The WHO's Emergencies Director Michael Ryan said Tuesday that the problem was a lack of visa clearances that should be resolved quickly. Earlier this week, Chinese authorities had refused to confirm the exact dates and details of the visit, a sign of the enduring sensitivity of their mission. COVID-19 was first detected in the central city of Wuhan in late 2019, but its origins remain bitterly contested. Mexico is the latest country to approve the COVID-19 vaccine that was jointly developed by British-Swedish pharmaceutical giant AstraZeneca and Oxford University. Foreign Minister Marcelo Ebrard tweeted the government has granted emergency approval for the vaccine Monday, adding that production will start very soon. The dose given of the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine in the United Kingdom happened on the same day British Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced a fresh round of nationwide lockdowns. That includes the closing of schools and non-essential shops. Johnson said people must stay at home until at least mid-February. He said British hospitals are under more strain now than they have been at any point during the pandemic. We have more international headlines for you on voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Liz Palka, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Africa forges ahead with free continental trade bloc despite the COVID-19 pandemic.
One good thing about the Africa Free Trade Area is that it has a dispute resolution mechanism, and that is very different because ECOWAS didn't have that. Member states are expected to exercise due diligence in relation to their role, and that they have to be accountable.
Kenya takes up its non-permanent member seat at the United Nations Security Council. Gambia's main opposition leader criticizes postponement of the country's voter registration exercise. Tanzania suspends a television station for breaching broadcasting guidelines. And Ghana's president will be sworn in tomorrow for his second term amid a court challenge to his re-election.
In most other jurisdictions, normally election petitions are resolved before inaugurations happen, but our constitution doesn't allow us to do that. The president's term expires midnight, 6th of January. Therefore, you have to swear in another president.
And COVID-19 pandemic worsens Zimbabwe's hunger crisis. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Despite a second wave of coronavirus in many African countries, the continent on January 1st this year launched the world's largest trade bloc after the World Trade Organization. Every African nation except Eritrea has signed on to the African Continental Free Trade Area, and countries including Nigeria are developing safety guidelines for trade during the pandemic. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The launch of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area was initially scheduled for the middle of 2020, but postponed due to the coronavirus pandemic. African government forged ahead with its launch this month, despite many African countries recording a second wave of the deadly virus, saying the trade deal could potentially boost African economies affected by COVID-19. But in some countries such as Nigeria, authorities are dealing cautiously with trade by screening people and goods. Joseph Atta is a Nigerian Customs Public Relations Officer.
They are looking at how they can ensure that things that are brought in or taken out are not things that can compromise national economy and security. And in doing this, in this period of COVID-19, we keep to the NCDC rules.
Nigeria is among over 30 African nations that ratified the treaty by December 2020. All 55 countries except Eritrea had originally signed on to join the agreement. Nigerian authorities reopened its borders in December after they were closed for over a year and said the nation was ready to trade with its neighbors. But this time round, with more scrutiny, says Atta.
Abuse of rules of origin will be definitely one of the major threats. Smuggling will be there too, considering our porous borders and the fact now that they said it's free for you. So influx of substandard goods. Of course, there will be negative impact on the government revenue because you're saying these things are now coming duty-free.
Rules of origin means all the goods traversing borders must be made within the African continent, not imported. The idea is to boost intra-Africa trade, which is low at around 16%, compared to about 68% for Africa's commerce with Europe and 59% for Africa's trade with Asia. The continent has a combined GDP of $3 trillion. Experts say the trade deal could expand intra-Africa trade by over 50%, and the accord contains a dispute resolution mechanism to handle trade disputes that may arise. Ken Ife is a macroeconomist and ECOWAS consultant.
One good thing about the Africa Free Trade Area is that it has a dispute resolution mechanism. And that is very different because ECOWAS didn't have that. Member states are expected to exercise due diligence in relation to their role, and that they have to be accountable and answerable to any violations.
Many African countries are counting on Nigeria's participation in the trade deal to boost the pact. Nigerian authorities have created a National Action Committee consisting of customs, security and health officials to oversee the country's trade dealings with other members and advise government accordingly. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Ghana is said to be ready for tomorrow's inauguration of the second term of President Nana Akufo-Addo. A large number of African and other world leaders are expected to attend. The swearing-in is taking place amid a petition to the country's Supreme Court brought by former President John Dramani Mahama, who was the presidential candidate for the main opposition National Democratic Congress, the NDC party, in the December 7 election. Kojo Asante of the Center for Democratic Development says this happened before in 2012 when then President-elect Mahama was sworn in, even though a petition challenging his election was pending before the Supreme Court.
In terms of the mood in the country going into the inauguration, there are a couple of things. Tomorrow there's going to be the swearing in of the new MPs and then the election of the Speaker. That's going to be controversial because both parties who have equal strength in parliament have nominated candidates for the election of the speaker. So this will be the test for the parties, how they are going to find compromises going forward to get a speaker that they can all work with. So that probably will also set the tone for how the opposition would treat the inauguration.
There's a petition before the Ghanaian Supreme Court challenging his re-election. But yet the inauguration is going ahead. Doesn't this create some uncertainty in the country?
This has happened in 2012 when President Mahama's election was challenged. He had to be sworn in, you know, on December 7th as well. And this is because there's really no choice. It's not the ideal situation because in most other jurisdictions, normally election petitions are resolved before inaugurations happen, but our constitution doesn't allow us to do that. The president's term expires midnight, 6th of January, and therefore you have to swear in another president to continue. And the constitution says that whatever that president does until a declaration from the Supreme Court is made on an election petition will not be affected. So in essence, yes, you have to swear in another president as you go forward.
The Chief Justice, who will administer the oath of office, will also likely preside over the petition, should he recuse himself.
The role of the Chief Justice, that is a constitutional role that the Chief Justice has to perform. It does not create that conflict of interest in that sense because, you know, this is a ceremonial role that the Chief Justice has to play. And of course, the Chief Justice, if he decides to sit on a panel together with other panel judges, he's one out of other judges who have to, you know, pronounce on the particular issue.
That was Kojo Asante of the Center for Democratic Development. He was speaking with us from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. The leader of Gambia's main opposition United Democratic Party, Usainu Dabo, has condemned the postponement of the country's voter registration exercise, which was scheduled for January 14. The Independent Electoral Commission, the IEC, cited what it called logistical challenges beyond its control to justify the postponement. But Dabo wouldn't buy the commission's explanation. As Pandere Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, Dabo has called for the revocation of the appointment of the deputy chair of the Electoral Commission.
The UDP leader, Usainu Dabo, says it is totally unacceptable for the Independent Electoral Commission to postpone the voter registration exercise. He also says elections are a matter of public interest and any logistical challenges facing the commission should be communicated to the public. Dabo said the commission should have consulted with the relevant political parties and stakeholders before postponing the registration exercise, which was scheduled for January 14. Ibrahim Adiba is the UDP Deputy National Organizing Secretary.
The reason given by the IEC, I don't think is right. They're talking about a logistic issue. So before they identify the date, they must have put that in consideration, the logistic, the venue, and every other aspect.
Diba has accused the Barrow government of trying to prevent visiting diaspora and Gambian holidaymakers to be registered.
So my take on this is, I believe you have over 20 to 30,000 Gambian diaspora presently in Gambia. And we knew majority of those people, if not 90%, I would say they are members of the United Democratic Party. So they're just trying to frustrate those people not to register.
Gambians are going to the polls in December of 2021 to elect a post-transition president. But the opposition UDP have started crying foul. The party has called for the revocation of the appointment of Oremi Joiner, a man they said is a member of President Barrow's NPP party.
He was a member of APRC supporting Jammeh. Now he is among the people who are crisscrossing in the state house every day supporting Barrow and Barrow's NPP agenda. And we have the videos of seeing Mr. Reiner, I mean, sitting, attending the political rallies, the meetings of NPP. How can you bring that person to be the referee?
Mamanji Njai is the administrative secretary of President Barrow's National People's Party.
Well, I can tell you without fear of contradiction that on our regional committee in Banjul, Oremi Joiner is not a co-opted member, and he's not a member of the NPP National Executive Committee, nor is he holding any position within the NPP. So if anybody has a contrary view or contrary position to what I've said, well, maybe they can provide the general public with evidence.
Njai says Joiner was appointed because of his credibility and the trust that the authorities have in him. He told VOA he doesn't see any problem with the IEC postponing the voter registration.
For me, I don't see this as an issue. The IEC didn't say that they have suspended registration of voters for good. All they've said is that due to logistical problems, you know, they are pushing the dates and the new dates will be communicated in due course. So I see no reason why people should be so pessimist, you know, and trying to point finger at either the NPP or the government.
Njai says the crying opposition have been threatened by President Barrow's increasing popularity in the country. But Ibrahim Adiba disagrees. He says Barrow has no prospect of winning the coming polls. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 6th. Kenya has officially taken up its seat as a non-permanent member of the United Nations Security Council. This comes 6 months after beating Djibouti for the seat. Kenya joins 9 other non-permanent members, and it comes 23 years when Kenya last held the position. As Marie Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, Kenya's representative, Ambassador Martin Kimani, says Kenya will use its tenure to ensure the safety of all Africans.
Speaking in New York City on Monday, Kenya's representative in the United Nations Security Council on permanent seat, Ambassador Martin Kimani, said that Kenya will ensure Africa and other developing states are well represented in matters of security.
Kenya is honored for the third time to begin its tenure as an elected member of the Security Council. We are profoundly conscious of the urgency of this moment in working to strengthen a multilateralism that serves the interests of our people in the Council, thus being an effective guardian of durable peace. Our mission will be innovative and open to new ideas and approaches, especially in strengthening prevention and regionally anchored solutions. We will listen. We will speak up boldly for Africa.
Winning the seat for Kenya was not easy, given the stiff competition Kenya faced from Djibouti, despite an endorsement by the over 50 countries making up the African Union as the continent's choice for the position. Ambassador Kimani, however, said Kenya will work closely with all the African Union and the United Nations member states to ensure safety for all.
Kenya looks forward to working with the A3 plus one, namely Niger, Tunisia, and St. Vincent and the Grenadines, to be a building block with the African Union and African people all over the world. To the people of Kenya, our mission in the Security Council will abide with our constitution. It will reflect your pragmatism, your dignity, and your ambition to build a fairer, and more prosperous world. We will work daily to ensure that we live in a peaceful and secure region and in a global order that is respectful of our sovereignty.
Kenya won 129 votes against Djibouti's 62 votes in the last year's June voting, more than two-thirds the number required under the rules of procedure of the General Assembly to win the seat. On the other hand, Tunisia, which assumed presidency of the United Nations Security Council for the fourth time in its history, promised to strongly commit in ensuring peace and security. Ambassador Tarek Ladeb of Tunisia said that despite the ongoing conflict and instability across the world, they will ensure peace prevails.
We are fully aware that we are taking this responsibility in a delicate international context, marked by a number of pressing challenges, including the persistent coronavirus pandemic, the many ongoing open conflicts, and situations of violence and instability across the world. In this regard, we will spare no effort to promote consensus and unity in the Council in order to enhance its efficiency in discharging its main responsibilities in maintaining international peace and security.
Kenya joins nine other non-permanent members and could get a chance to preside over the council sittings, which is an opportunity to influence agenda. Kenya will now be part of key decision-making on global peace and security. Some of the decisions may include sanctions, authorizing use of force to preserve peace, and also electing judges of the International Court of Justice. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiombo in Milwaukee, USA.
The Tanzania Communication Regulatory Authority has suspended the Wasafi Entertainment Television for 6 months for allegedly breaching the country's broadcasting guidelines. Regulatory Authority Director Johannes Kalungule told a news conference on Tuesday that Wasafi TV broadcast live performance by local singer and socialite Gigi Money while she danced almost nude. In addition to the six-month suspension, the regulatory authority ordered the station to apologize. Onesmo Olengu Ramua is the national coordinator of the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition.
According to Tanzania regulatory authorities and laws that regulate the conduct of the media, actually the media house is accused of not controlling those who are doing the live performance. The Wasafi TV, which is owned by one of the famous musicians, Diamond Platnumz, had a special program which invited various musicians, celebrities in the country. And one of them was actually performing with a sort of a regalia or a performance fabric that in real sense, it might be interpreted as a guest ethics of media when it comes to live coverage. According to TCRA, the way that musicians was performing is contradicting some of the regulations and laws that govern live performance or what we call live coverage by our media in Tanzania. At the same time, the Tanzania Regulatory Authority is saying the way the live performance show was conducted also violates children's rights according to TCRA regulations and other laws of the country that protect the right of children.
What are the implications when a media organization like Wasafi is immediately banned or prevented from broadcasting?
As I said previously, that we don't condone any such kind of live coverage that at the end of the day also violates other groups' rights, such as children and whatever. But on the other hand, we don't also condone or support such kind of general punishment that affects the entire media house. Closing a media house for 6 months, which has more than 100 employees paying taxes here and there, you're also telling that those people should starve for the next 6 months. Sometimes we encourage that we should have sort of punishment that do not take the entire team to carry the cross, maybe of one or two people who did not behave as they are supposed to do. To me, I would advise that in such situations, let the performer, the direct accused person, be punished directly, or the owners or whatever of the media house and whatever, and avoid taking those general punishment that at the end of the day, the people will be suffering. It will also include those who are not directly participating in the live coverage or the performance.
You know, this is not the first time that a station connected with Mr. Bongo Flava has been suspended or banned. So this brings to a concerning issue about media regulation in Tanzania.
Well, I don't say that I should not actually conclude that maybe this media house is somewhere or the government is trying to discriminate them or to suppress them. I don't see it that way because, first of all, the musician is a very good friend of the government. They had a lot of campaigns with the current incumbent president and the party. So I don't say that there is a sort of enmity or between the authorities and the media house, especially the Wasafi, because the two groups or the two parties are good friends in general. To me, I will take it as a general matter that we have that bad trend of banning media houses, of fining media houses, sometimes the registration, if at all, without considering that all these media houses in Tanzania or press groups, they need to enjoy some sort of freedom for them to be able to access information and share information to the public without too much restrictions and too much state interference in terms of what should be aired, what should not be aired, and whatever.
Onesmo Olemguromua is the national coordinator of the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition. You're speaking with us from Dar es Salaam. COVID-19 pandemic has worsened the hunger crisis in Zimbabwe. As store shelves remain empty, some are taking innovative steps to put food on the table. Mbare City resident Kurai Felix Mukaro, known as Uncle Bravo, turned an unused soccer field into a garden with dozens of youths to grow crops to feed the elderly. He says the project was born out of desperation for food.
It started with the front line again when they came and they gave us some food packages. And then I said, no, this is an injection that, no, we've got now to start working on our own also and get sustainable from the point of the hampers we have been given. They came and they helped. They gave hampers to some elderly people and also gave hampers to the little children. Now we said, no, this is quite a good baptism that we have been also empowered to do something big for ourselves and our community.
What were you trying to achieve in trying to start this project?
What we were trying to achieve was the poverty which was already getting by in my own community, including within myself. Things were not good when COVID started. We thought now jobs, nothing to do. With my little ones, yeah, I think we can sustain ourselves because we still got the soil and the manure and everything, and we can still do the best we can to make sure we are the ones to help within our community in a big way.
How is the project doing at the moment?
It's doing very well. We didn't have any place to go, but I just go there in the number 7. It's now called number 7 ground. And when we started with just a few beds. Now, I think within that place, we've got about now 15 big beds. And they're doing very well. And through the assistance of frontline as well, we've got a variety of plants like broccoli. We've got cauliflower. We've got red cabbage. We have got now a lot of sweet potato beds. We've got big potato beds coming up there. We've got a rape. We have got also spinach. And now we're having a lot of spinach, which we want to make sure at least if some people can help us buy those things, that would be quite great for ourselves. So I think we have got almost right now beds, which are going almost about 30 beds, which we think we can nurture them properly. What we might need is a market.
That was Kurai Felix Mukaro, also known as Uncle Bravo. He spoke with Chinedu Ofor from Mutare, Zimbabwe. And that's it for this Wednesday, January 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a very good day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to ndumbulo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all.
and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.